Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
Now it is Wednesday, so that means it is Medical Matters time, and we're delighted to be joined back again by Dr. Eamon Shannon. Eamon, how are you this afternoon?
Dave, how are you? I'm grand indeed.
That's good, that's good. So today it is general queries, so anyone who has
any questions for you, ask anything.
So we'll fire away, Eamon, if that's all right for you.
Absolutely.
So the first question, a lady in her late 70s suffers from polymyalgia. I may have said that wrong, though.
Oh, yeah, you did. You've got it spot on, yeah.
So she says she's able to manage the condition all along, but recently suffers from exhaustion. She's looking for advice on how to manage the condition.
So let's step back a minute and talk about this thing, to give it its full title, polymyalgia rheumatica, or we'll call it PMR for short. Polymyalgia is a condition where, for reasons that are generally not poorly understood, the body's own immune system starts attacking the muscles, particularly the muscles of what we call the limb girdles. So that's the shoulders and the thighs. So classically, the person with PMR will come into us with lots of stiffness and soreness, and they really get very stiff and very sore. The treatment for PMR is both easy and hard. Easy in the sense that you give the person who is affected with PMR the appropriate anti-inflammatory medication, specifically steroid tablets, and the results are usually dramatically effective. The person gets a great relief of symptoms very rapidly. It's hard, however, because you're treating rather than curing the condition. So typically the person will need to take steroids for a number of years. And the problem with that then is because there are long-term side effects from taking steroids. Particularly, we'd be looking at bone health. It very much increases the risk of osteoporosis. It also increases the risk of things like diabetes. However, the background to all of this is that this is one of these so-called autoimmune disorders. It's one of these conditions where the body's own immune system has gone wonky. And it may very well be that in addition to the PMR, our poor listener may well have something else going on from an autoimmune point of view. So what I've been doing is I've been encouraging her to attend her GP. There may be an issue directly because of the PMR. There may be an issue because of the steroids she's taking for the PMR. Or it may be that there's some related condition that is giving her the generalized fatigue and weight and tiredness. And the best thing to do is get herself checked out properly.
So that's the advice for that lady there. Another lady gets in touch, Eamon. She's 54. Is there any alternatives for HRT with mild osteopenia? Doctor not recommended HRT due to blood clots, she says.
Yeah, so the answer to the osteopenia bit now, I mentioned in the talking about previous piece about the risk of osteoporosis from taking steroids. Osteopenia is a radiological diagnosis, and I'll explain what I mean by that. When you do the particular specific scan looking for the condition of osteoporosis, you do a thing called a DEXA scan. And what happens is that when the radiologists report to us, they give back a figure, and it's a negative figure. So if the figure is from 0 down to negative 1, from 0 down to minus 1, that's considered what we call normal bone density. From 1 down to minus 2.5, it's the state called osteopenia, and less than 2.5, it's called osteoporosis. Osteopenia of itself is something that is a radiological rather than a clinical diagnosis. Somebody who has osteopenia, you're looking to help them maintain their bone mass. And typically and classically, what you'll be doing is encouraging them to do weight-bearing exercise, specifically walking, along with making sure they have adequate calcium and vitamin D intake, and that's the treatment. Long time ago, there was a suggestion that you could use HRT as a treatment for osteopenia and osteoporosis. I think those days are long since gone. Hormone replacement therapy is dramatically effective at relieving the symptoms of menopause, but it doesn't relieve anything else. So not osteoporosis, not heart disease. So the thing is that in this case, it would be calcium, vitamin D and weight-bearing exercise would be the way to deal with this.
Okay, so that's the advice for that listener there. Another caller got in touch. She says, my daughter is 15 and gets a very bad migraine before her time of the month. She's not on anything, only Nurofen. What is best for her, she asks.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen this down through the years, and it's a horrible dose because, okay, so anyway, but it, okay, there was a time many years ago when if a woman had migraines, It was absolutely forbidden to use the pill. And the reason I'm saying that is because many of the symptoms that are associated before the period can be abolished by using the pill. Can be, not will be, but can be. The difficulty is that in the past, it was a complete no-no. You could not use the pill in women who had migraines. My understanding is that these days it is possible to use the pill in women who have migraines, as long as it's not making the migraines any worse. So in the first instance, it may be a question of considering using the pill to change the girl's cycle so as that she's not getting the migraines. Alternatively, and I know I've certainly had one or two women down through the years where we use other methods of controlling the cycle, not using hormones. And again, this would be something you need to talk to your own GP about. But there are ways and means you can control the cycle and in that way take away the cause of the migraines in the first place.
Okay, so that's the advice for that lady and her daughter there. Another lady's gotten in touch with us. She's in her early 60s. Last year, I broke my hip, and since then, I'm getting night sweats some nights. Could this be related to breaking my hip, she asks?
Yeah, possibly the other way around. You see, one of the issues that's there is that we've been talking a bit about osteoporosis now. A person's peak bone density, the most denser bones will be, is typically in our late 20s and early 30s. If people are not taking adequate levels of calcium or adequate amounts of calcium during their 20s, they may not achieve peak bone density. The difficulty is, now I did say earlier on, HRT is not a treatment for osteoporosis, but we do know that after the change, there can be an accelerated loss of bone loss in women, or an accelerated rate of bone loss in women. So the thing is that you may see osteoporosis occurring earlier in women than in men. That does genuinely happen in both sexes. What I'm driving at is that the recurrence of the hot flushes, or the symptoms of the hot flushes, are probably not as a result of the fracture, but the, if you like, the underlying issue of the changes in the woman's whole physiology and body chemistry and all the rest of it, which occurring with the change would, on the one hand, have made her more prone to developing the fracture of her hip, and on the other hand, maybe giving her the hot flushes. This is, again, something to have a conversation with your GP about. I'm delighted to say that the pendulum with regard to the management of osteoporosis has changed back to the appropriate use of HRT, which remains very, very effective in relieving the symptoms of menopause. So it may be that our listener would go on HRT to relieve our hot flushes, but then separately be looking at measures to strengthen our bone, calcium, vitamin D, weight-bearing exercises, plus or minus using one of the medications that are used to help strengthen or to reduce bone loss.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Another query in for you, Dr. Eamon. I don't eat fish and don't really eat meat. My question is, what to eat that's nutritious? I'm in my early 70s and would appreciate help. I've joint pain, but health is good otherwise.
Yeah, so the answer is that I'm not a dietitian or a nutritionist, and they're the people you need to talk to about this. I suppose the general principles are that people will have all sorts of diets. The fact that you're not eating fish or that you're not eating meat, okay, it may mean that your protein intake is a bit down, but from that point of view. But there are plenty other vegetable sources and nut sources of proteins that you can get. Best thing to do is talk to your GP. There are nutritionists and dietitians that the HSE have, and if you get referred to one of them, they'll give you really good practical advice about what to have for the breakfast, dinner and tea. That will make sure you have a balanced diet, which is what I'm only interested in at the end of the day.
Okay, so that's good advice for that caller there. Another caller's in touch, Eamon, a 35-year-old male. He says he's got fluid in his knee and asks how to drain it out.
Be careful of what you wish for. You see, the problem is that you've got to ask the question, why does the or listener have fluid in their knee in the first place? It usually indicates there's been an injury of some sort. Draining the fluid in of itself might give you temporary relief, but it certainly isn't sorting out the underlying problem. The other issue is that there was a well-known orthopedic surgeon in Tralee many years ago who warned us never, ever, ever to go drawing fluid from the knees. Now, it can be done and it can be done safely, but what his concern is that if it's not done properly, you can introduce infection into the knee, and if you get an infection into a joint, it's a disaster, because it very rapidly destroys the joint and you're left with a useless joint for the rest of your life. So I'd be very careful about sticking any needles into any joints unless somebody's doing it who knows exactly what they're doing and are properly set up and arranged and all the rest of it. But I suppose what I'd be more interested in is, why is the fluid there in the first place? What is the cause of the fluid? Deal with that, because usually if you deal with the underlying cause of the problem, then the fluid will go of its own accord.
That's the advice for that listener there. A female who's age 78 gets in touch, Eamon, and says, my feet are burning very badly and my body is freezing cold. I'm very uncomfortable. Any help with that? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. There are a couple of possibilities there. One of them is that our poor listener may well have a difficulty with circulation. The other thing is that there may be some form of vitamin or mineral deficiency that's causing this. What's happening here is that for some reason the blood vessels in the leg are opening up, which is causing the feet to burn, and the rest of the body, then the circulation is shut down. This is one that somebody needs to lay hands on your feet. They need to feel the pulses in your feet. They need to examine your feet. And they may well need to do some screening blood tests, because what you do is you find out why the person has the burning feet in the first place, and then either try to deal with the problem to replace whatever is missing, or at the very worst, to use something to help relieve the burning, the symptoms that the person is experiencing.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Another listener gets in touch. She's in her late 60s. She says the hips at the below my back feel very heavy and she feels tired but no pain. And if I wear support, it is much better. She asks, what could this be?
Yeah, again, without somebody examining her, it's hard to tell. My suspicion is that she may well have some form of rheumatism, and rheumatism is where there's inflammation of the muscles. And of course, again, it begs the question, well, why is there inflammation of the muscles present? And that in turn would need the appropriate, well, talk to the person, get a good history from them, hear what their story is. Secondly, carry out a good examination, and then probably the appropriate following up blood tests. And again, once you understand or where you have a better understanding of what the cause of the problem is, then you can deal with it.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Listener, a male in his 80s, Eamon, gets in touch, and he said he was recently diagnosed with a bowel disorder called diverticulosis.
Diverticulosis. Yeah.
Is it a serious disorder, he asks, and can something be done to help it?
Okay, an interesting state. It's epidemic in Western society, and it's a reflection of our diet that's poor in roughage. So diverticulosis, what you have to go back to the anatomy, and all the bowel, the large bowel in particular, the colon, are composed of rings of muscle, concentric rings of muscle that are tied onto each other. And when these contract, they cause waves of contraction that move along the bowel. It's what we call peristalsis, that moves foods forward. However, in the bowel, there are a number of muscles that run along the length of the bowel itself. On the outside, there's typically three of them. So you've got at three positions on the outside, you've got this kind of supporting muscle running along the length of the bowel. But in between, then you've got these rings of bowel. The problem is that if somebody has a diet, most people in Western society, unfortunately, are in this position. So this condition is so common. It's so frequent as to be virtually common in as we get older. Basically, what happens is that the best way I can describe this, if you can imagine, you've got one of those big long balloons, and you grab it between your fingers and you squeeze it, and you know the way that little bits of the bubble, bits of the balloon can bubble up between your fingers. That's exactly what happens in the bowel when the jargon for it is when there is increased intraluminal pressure. In other words, if the person is straining for a bowel motion because they're a bit constipated, bits of the wall of the bowel actually pop out between these long muscles, and that's what the diverticula are. Now, you do a colonoscopy and most people over the age of 60 in Ireland, and you'll find that they have these diverticula present. In and of themselves, it's an indication that you do need more roughage in your diet, and also to make sure that you're taking plenty of fluid in your diet. Now, the important point straight away is do not take large amounts of roughage straight away, otherwise you get desperate cramps. Gradually increase the amount of roughage. In the majority of cases, diverticula are not dangerous, but occasionally they can become inflamed, causing discomfort and soreness, and very, very rarely one of these diverticula can actually burst, in which case fecal material from inside the bowel gets around outside the bowel into the abdomen, contaminating the abdomen, and you get the condition of peritonitis, which is potentially very serious, but fortunately is an extremely rare state. A common condition, generally not bad or dangerous. The only other problem with it is that because it can cause discomfort, pain and bleeding from the back passage, it may mask an underlying bowel cancer. So you need to be aware of that as well.
Okay, so that's good information for that listener there. Eamon, lots of queries and questions coming in for you, but we must take a quick ad break. So we'll be back. If you have any questions for Dr. Eamon, do get in touch with us, 066 712 3666, or you can text or WhatsApp us on 083 300 3300. We'll have more on the way with Dr. Eamon after these.
Medical Matters on Talk About, brought to you in association with the Bon Secours Hospital Tralee, celebrating 200 years of the Bon Secours mission.
You're very welcome back to Wednesday's Talk About, and Dr. Eamon Shanahan is here with us. The doctor is in session, Eamon, and we've loads of questions to put to you. So another one that we've gotten in is, I am a 66-year-old female. I have been on 5 milligrams of statin for the last 6 months. I have white patches on my tongue and excessive dry mouth. I keep sipping water at night. Any advice?
Yeah, you're caught putting the devil in the deep sea. So you've asked the question, why are you on the statin in the first place? I even know that the recommendation is either by your GP or possibly by a cardiologist. The reality of it is that there are many potential side effects to the statins. Whether or not this is a specific problem or not, I'm not honestly sure. My advice in this case, and indeed in every case where you feel you're having a reaction to the medication, you should go back to the person who prescribed it in the first place and talk to them about it.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Another caller gets in touch and they say, Dr. Eamon, I'm in my late 70s. If you could help, I have tennis elbow since January, got physio, but still suffer from a lot of pain. Any advice?
Yeah, tennis elbow. So tennis elbow is one of the classic so-called overuse injuries. It's not that you've banged or injured the elbow. It's actually just that you've been using the elbow or the arm a lot. And the issue is that what a tennis elbow is if you grab yourself by your elbow and the bony bit on the outside of the elbow is where all the muscles from the back of the fingers actually are attached to. And if you're using your hand a lot, what will happen is that bit of bone can become inflamed. The use of a topical anti-inflammatory can be of benefit because it's one of those few places where the tissues that are inflamed are right next to the skin, and the anti-inflammatories could penetrate in far enough to might help relieve it. Or you could take an anti-inflammatory by mouth. Probably the most effective treatment, though it is somewhat uncomfortable treatment, is actually to inject the area with a steroid. What that will do is the anti-inflammatory will take down the inflammation and hopefully in that way take away your pain for you.
Okay, so that's the advice there for that listener. Another listener gets in touch regarding rheumatoid arthritis. He says, I'm a 36-year-old male. I'm on tablets and injections, but side effects of nausea, and I experience weak legs. Could you give any advice?
Yeah, we were talking earlier on about the condition of polymyalgia rheumatica, PMR, which is one of the connective tissue disorders. And unfortunately, rheumatoid arthritis is probably the definitive connective tissue disorder. And indeed, I've often said it's not so much rheumatoid arthritis as rheumatoid disease. And what I mean to say by that is that while rheumatoid arthritis obviously specifically attacks the joints and causes inflammation in the joints, it can and it does attack every tissue in the body and cause inflammation there. The difficulty is that for reasons that are not understood properly or well enough, the immune system is going wonky and is attacking various tissues in the body. We then have to use very powerful drugs to try to suppress their immune system, which of themselves are prone to causing side effects, and the side effects can be very, very troublesome. Again, to repeat, unfortunately, what I had said just a short while ago, in a case like this where you are running into issues with side effects from the medication for your rheumatoid arthritis, this is something you need to have a discussion with the rheumatologist about, the person who would have prescribed those medications for you. There are a variety of medications available, and I'm seeing more and more names coming through. I don't know anything about these because they're outside my area of expertise, but the best thing to do is talk to the rheumatologist who prescribed these for you, or indeed speak to the rheumatology nurse, and they will talk to the rheumatologist for you and say, look, I'm running into these side effects. These are pretty intractable. These are impacting on my quality of life. I'd be grateful if you could do something to change my treatment to try and improve my quality of life.
So that's the advice there for that listener. And another caller gets in touch. Dr. Eamon, I'm a 47-year-old female and there's mucus from my throat lodging in my throat, sometimes clear and sometimes green. I wheeze when it gets lodged and have to cough and spit it out a few times before it clears. What do you think is causing this? I've had it with a few years and my doctor reckons it's allergies.
Yeah, those two possibilities there. This stuff could either be coming from the stomach or it could be coming from the lungs. One of the possibilities is that you're getting a bit of reflux, that is acid from your stomach is coming up your gullet, your esophagus, into the back of your throat and causing inflammation and causing the mucus. The other problem is, the other issue is that there may well be some form of ongoing chronic allergy of some sort or inflammation of some sort coming from the lungs. Mucus of itself is a sticky stuff that the body secretes to try to trap things, let's put it that way. In this case, the things might be allergens. There are a number of medications. There's one particular non-steroid, non-antihistamine allergy medication that might be suitable in your case. Or alternatively, you could perhaps use an inhaled steroid. Now, I've spoken previously about the issues that are about taking steroid tablets by mouth in the long term. Generally, with the inhaled steroids, because you're taking a much, much smaller dose, you don't run into the same kind of effects, and it might help control your symptoms for you. Ideally, you would identify what the allergen is. Ideally, you'd try and identify what is the problem. There are blood tests that will give a guide, and anybody says there's a blood test that will tell you exactly what your allergies are lying. There are tests that will give us a guide as to what your possibly allergies are, and it might be worthwhile seeing if you can identify what are the things that are triggering this in the first place, so as you can see what can be done to try to avoid them.
Okay, so that's the advice for that caller there. Another listener gets in touch, Eamon, and says, my husband is a man in his mid-80s who's okay with day-to-day tasks but has short-term memory loss. In every other aspect, he's fine. Can anything be done to aid his memory, she asks.
Okay, sadly and unfortunately, no. The slightly longer answer is that there may be a cognitive impairment, not necessarily a condition, not necessarily as a result of aging, but it certainly is more common the older we get. And if there's an underlying progressive disorder like that, there isn't an awful lot you can do for their medications that might temporarily ameliorate it but won't stop the progression. If, on the other hand, the issue is to do with the person's circulation, you get the so-called multi-infarct dementia. So what's happening is that the person gets tiny, tiny, tiny little strokes. Not so much that you'd see it on the outside, but they do gradually rob the person's intellect. And it may very well be that the treatment there is to treat their circulation and in that way hopefully slow the progression of the condition.
Okay, so that's the advice there. And North Kerry listener gets in touch, Dr. Eamon. She says, I'm in my 50s. I walk every day and do weights every week. I don't smoke. I drink socially and have a good diet. I haven't had bloods done in a few years or attended a doctor in a few years. Should I get my bloods done regularly, she asks.
And the question is, why would you want to do it? Genuinely, if you're leading a good and healthy lifestyle, okay, if we again step back in this week in which the census figures are released, and if you look at life expectancy in 1926 and life expectancy in 2026, life expectancy for everybody, women in particular, is vastly longer than it was a century ago. At this stage, most otherwise fit and healthy people can, on average, women can expect to live into their mid-80s and our listeners in their mid-50s. The only reason we get the blood test done, I think the only thing to watch out for is the family history, because that's the one you can't get away from. If there's a family history of underlying issues, such as heart disease or kidney disease or cancers or something like that, it would be worthwhile getting some screening blood tests done to see what the story is. Otherwise, getting screening blood tests done is usually for peace of mind. But to be fair to your creditor, you're looking after yourself, you're doing the right thing, you're doing the right lifestyle, and lifestyle matters at the end of the day.
Okay, so that's the advice there for that listener. Another listener gets in touch, Eamon, and says, asks what tests are available for pancreatic cancer and ovarian cancer, or will the results show up with blood tests?
Sadly, very, very few. There aren't any. How to put this one? The difficulty about pancreatic and ovarian cancer is that these are organs that are buried deep inside the body. And the difficulty is that they tend not to throw off signals that can be picked up with blood tests until the disease is quite far advanced. Even scanning for these is problematic, because the trouble is that there can be changes inside these organs, which are well inside the body, which can be happening quietly and silently until the disease is well advanced. So the bottom line is that screening for ovarian and for pancreatic cancers is not great. I think the thing we'd be watching out for there, particularly for the ovarian cancer, if there's a family history of cancer, especially if there's a history of breast cancer, and particularly if we've got this thing called Lynch syndrome, there is an argument to be made that at the point in time when the person, when the woman, I should say, has felt that she has completed her family or is not having any more children, there might be an argument for actually doing what they call a prophylactic oophorectomy, which is to say to, as a planned procedure, remove the ovaries. The situation, of course, is when you do that is the woman will then go into an instant and severe menopause and she will need hormone replacement therapy to replace the hormones that she's missing. So in those cases where there's a high risk because of family history of ovarian cancer, it may be the case that the ovaries are removed, but that's obviously quite a drastic step and something you'd have to talk to the relevant specialist about.
Okay, so that's the advice for that listener. Another listener gets in touch and he says he's got pain in his biceps and shoulder joint, sometimes going down towards the elbow joint. The pain has been going on for a few months now. He's unsure if it's the way he's sleeping or did he do damage in some way. He has movement in the arm, although it can be stiff. What could it be and what can he do?
And curiously, this loops back to where we started from. This could actually be a PMR. This could be a polymyalgia rheumatica. So I would encourage him to go and talk to his own GP. They'll do the relevant screening blood tests, which are very simple, and give you an idea straight away whether it is PMR or not. Otherwise, it may well be just that he has got musculoskeletal pains. A bit of physiotherapy plus an anti-inflammatory would help relieve that.
Okay, and another listener asks, can you ask the doctor what's going on when I pass blood with cystitis?
Yeah, so, and I'm glad that they use the word cystitis, so that indicates they understand that the problem is the bladder problem. The bladder is a very vascular organ. There are lots of blood vessels on the inside of the bladder. And if you have an infection in your bladder, or indeed if you have inflammation in the bladder, even if there's not infection there, it can cause the blood vessels and the lining of the bladder to swell up. They ooze blood, and that's why you see blood in the urine.
That's the advice there. And finally, Dr. Eamon, we're almost out of time, so we'll give you one more. It's I've palpitations in my heart. I'm feeling okay. I think it might be from my bowel. What does the doctor think?
Yeah, there's a curious association there between bowel problems and palpitations. Quick answer is you need a lot more information. What is the bowel problem and what way are you experiencing these palpitations? The quick answer is you need to talk to your own GP about that.
Okay, so that's the advice there. Unfortunately, we're all out of time, Eamon, but we'll save over some of the questions and we'll put you to again next week.
Please, God.
That's perfect.
All right.
Dr. Eamon Shanahan there with the weekly medical matters slot. We've